Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Max 6 Workspace and the Conscious Capitalism Arizona headquarters in Tempe, Arizona, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki, and I am very excited to invite back Jeff Orr and actually Ryan Parker, both whom have been both who have been on with us before. I was trying to be too, like, grammatically correct.
It's good to be grammatically correct.
I botched it, so no win there. So we're back with Jeff Orr and Ryan Parker. Jeff is a keynote speaker and leadership consultant with In Demand Leadership. Welcome back, Jeff.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Yeah, I think it was 2 weeks ago you were on Rhino Nation with Michelle and Jacob.
I was. It was great. And then a year prior, we were doing a live show.
At SynTech.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
It was so much fun. So with Arizona Small Business Alliance, or Association, right?
It was very loud there, but it was fun to talk with people.
And that was our first time to meet. And I can't recall how we originally connected, but we had planned to do that segment in the studio. And then I was invited to do SynTech, a live broadcast all day. And I'm like, Jeff, would you mind coming there? He's like, I'm up for anything.
Yeah.
And when I arrived, you know, all the vendors were getting set up, Ryan at the time was responsible for vendors. And he's like, hey, you'll be proud of me. I moved you away from the speakers and from the stage, and I've got you way over here in this corner. Still great visibility. I'm like, okay, that's great. And so we walk over. He walks away. I start to get set up. And I turn and look, and there's this money cash machine. You know, when you go in that that closet thing, and they turn on the
blower.
Generator,
yeah.
The blower. Oh, my gosh.
It was very loud.
It was so loud. I'm like, hey, way to go on the stage, but we missed the mark on the generator blowing every 5 minutes for people to catch cash. But we had a good time, didn't we?
We did.
Yes.
We just timed it.
We did, right? Exactly.
The question is, did you guys catch any cash?
We did not. I never had a breathing moment to go in there and actually get myself in there.
No, but I talked with the person that was heading up, and she gave me a dollar.
Well, there you go.
Because, you know, hey, I was just so nice.
Right. There you go. Here, I'll give you a dollar as long as you're nice during this segment.
Here's a dollar. Go away. Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much.
So glad to have you back. And Ryan Parker, creative director, owner with Explio Media. You've been on with us before as well.
Yes. Thanks for having me back, Karen.
Happy to have you back. I don't think it was more than maybe 2 months ago. Was it January?
I think it was January.
We had you on with Tisha Pelletier.
Yes.
And the gal from Dave & Buster's, and
correct.
I'm forgetting her name, but it was a fun conversation around all the neat things that you all are doing to, again, bring our business community and entrepreneurs together.
Networking through Social Connect.
Yes. Once a month, right?
Actually, it's now quarterly, I think, is how Tisha's running it.
Very
now.
Good.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I know you've been a big champion for everything that she's doing there. And
she has on April 30th, if I'm not mistaken, she has a rooftop engagement for Social Connect that will have a DJ, and it'll be really neat. It'll be
very
really neat.
Fun.
Yeah.
And where are they doing that? Is that
that is going to be at Dave & Buster's.
It is.
Yes, they have a rooftop facility up there in Tempe.
I think I do remember them mentioning that. So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Right before it gets too warm.
Yeah.
Enjoy the weather with the gang over at Social Connect.
Yeah.
So why are we here today? We're here to talk about both of your businesses and really leadership in corporations and organizations, right? We want to get the down and dirty about what is it like to be a leader today? And how can we have these conversations when there are these massive spaces in between our age level? Right?
Something I'm really passionate about, obviously, leadership. But something that I've really been keying in on the last, year has been generational leadership. Started with millennial leadership in a TEDx talk that I did last February, not this one, but a year ago, on millennial leadership and why organizations really need to pour into this younger group. Don't ignore them. There's a lot of great leaders there. And it's expanded now into generational leadership is how do we really focus on connecting together? Something that I've been really thinking about almost like a family, because most organizations, they're trying to build a culture. And that culture is, if you think about it, like, you know, when we were growing up, at least when you and I were growing up, Karen, there was a Kool-Aid house, right?
And I was that house.
Yes. My mom was, you know, that was our house too. And like, there's one or two houses on the block where all the kids congregate together, right? They love being there. And there's a reason. And we didn't think about it this way. We didn't say, oh, yes, we've got this wonderful family culture and we've got these opportunities for kids to learn. No, we didn't think about it like that. What it was is that the house was warm. It was relational. It was safe. But there were boundaries, you know, right? We had rules and mm-hmm. you didn't, you know, mess with the rules.
You don't kick the dog.
You don't kick the dog.
Well, and if you do, you leave.
The cat is okay, but I've got two cats, so I can say that. But there was something special about that Kool-Aid house. All the kids came there. And there were other houses, you know, I had friends that their house was cool. They had all the cool toys. But I'll tell you what, when Dad got home, I didn't want to be there. It just didn't feel safe for some reason.
Because he was kicking the dog.
I didn't know what it was, but it just, you know, it's like, okay, something's not right here. I just don't want to be around.
Yeah.
So now take that into a corporation. Now, corporations have a bunch of people together. And it's really funny if you think about this. Boomers, baby boomers, are like the corporation's firstborn child, right? They're the overly successful, goal-centric, got-it-together kinds of people. They're overachievers. They're like your typical firstborn, and that's fine. And then the Gen Xers are like the middle child that everybody forgot. Oh, we've got a second child? Oh, yes, I guess we do. But we're the peacemakers. We're the ones that are just kind of independent. We're in between. And then you've got the millennials, the baby of the family. Right. They're the fun ones, the casual ones. They're social. They're kind of the clowns, but they're, you know, everybody wants to hang out with them. And then mom and dad had another child, and that's Gen Z, and they're coming up into the corporation right now. But right now, a lot of organizations, they want to create a culture because, hey, we've got to gather our young talent. We've got to attract them. Hey, let's make our place really cool. So it's like a family saying, well, let's just get the latest TV and the games and the, you know, the
open floor plan.
That's right.
Right.
And that'll bring him in. It'll bring them, but it won't keep them.
No.
What keeps them is a true corporate culture, and it starts from the top down. And it has to be one of, let's think about this differently. And some corporations are starting to do this. NVIDIA is one of them, where they are walking life with their employees, not just engaging them, but walking life with them. This is a completely different kind of concept where, you know what? You're in your middle age. You've got aging parents you're taking care of. You've got young kids that you're taking care of as well. Let's see if we can't be more flexible in your work schedule. And over here for millennials, this is what NVIDIA is doing. They're paying $6,000 a year of a millennial's student loans up to $30,000. No, you know, there's no strings attached, at least as far as I could read from it, but they're walking life to engage them into a different experience. And that's what it is. They want their employees to experience something different. So if we think of our corporate culture more familial, and I know some people want to kick somebody out of the family and adopt another one, but that's a different story. But if we think about it differently, instead of the baby boomer looking at the millennial going, you don't know anything, you're irrelevant. And the millennial looking at the boomer saying, you're old, you're irrelevant, you have no value. You wouldn't say that to your sibling, right? In a healthy environment, in a healthy family. You would say instead, how can I resource you to make you better? How can I help you grow and be better at what you do? That's what a healthy family does. And if, as an organization, if we start thinking corporately in a culture of how can we help each other be better, that's going to be a game changer for generational leadership. That's one of the areas I'm passionate about and speaking on.
Well, I guess that means I've got to get rid of the beanbag chairs and foosball tables at the office, Jeff.
Is anybody using them? That's the question.
Well, that's the thing. We just throw this stuff out there. Yeah. That'll be the cool thing. But it's only cool and only effective if it's part of the natural culture from the top down. So if your company, if your company culture is very formalized, trying to add things in it that make it informal isn't going to work long term because the top leadership is still formal. Yeah. Right. So be who you are. If you want to grow and change, that's one thing, but be who you are. And that starts from the top leadership. And I know Ryan and I have been talking about this in regard to some tools that we have that help start that conversation with those top leaders.
Can you guys speak to those tools? Because I have some questions. I'm not sure where we're going to go on that conversation, but tell us a little bit about what you guys are working on.
So we use a tool called the MindSuite GPS. And GPS is not just global positioning system. It's actually global possibilities, solutions, and systems. So basically what it is when we go into organizations, most organizations look at things such as profit and loss, and they look at hard numbers. They look at the tangibles that they can see, and then they point fingers downstream to their colleagues, whether it be their quote-unquote underlings, as they like to call them, or their minions, as I've actually heard people say. And they like to roll everything downstream to them. Unfortunately, that management style doesn't work. We actually call it a slave-master relationship because it is not mutually beneficial to both parties in that effort. Basically, you have leadership leading by command only. And a lot of American companies have been built around that because of kind of our militaristic system of how we've learned to manage people, right? I put my fist down hard enough, you're going to do what I need you to do. And we've carried that on for years. And most organizations have never thought, what if we looked at our people as important as our basic operations and our finances? So when most companies, you look at it, it's a two-legged stool. They don't look at the people as the third leg that balances that stool and really shores up the organization. So they don't think of things such as like humanities inside of the business. And that's where leadership really starts from, is the conversation of empathy, listening, resilience, all these things that businesses have glossed over for years. And it's funny because that's where millennials are coming in. They want cause. And the reason why they're looking at cause, and Jeff speaks a lot to this, is they're trying to find something that's missing in the corporate culture, which is something that they can stand behind. And Jeff speaks a lot to this when he says, if you're going to get all your folks in a room and you're going to say, guys, we're going to work our butts off. We're going to put in 60 hours a week so you can make our shareholders more profit and you can make leadership bigger bonuses. People look around and go, what's that all about? Mm-hmm. And so the conversations we look at start from more of a humanities perspective.
I love that term. I've never heard the term humanities as related to a company culture.
Yeah. And that's what we like to do. And a lot of times how conversations like this go with the typical company in a typical environment, in a command and control environment is, John, you didn't do really good last month and your numbers are missing. And it automatically puts barriers up. And what's happened is in the multi-generational workspace, you're seeing Xers start to huddle together. You're seeing millennials huddle together. You're seeing boomers huddle together. And then the walls start going up. The communication breaks down. What we found through the MindSuite GPS and through using tools such as this, for the GPS has over 30 years of past business data inside of it. And it's data from companies like BASF, Bayer, the City of Toronto. These are all organizations that we've worked with that we have data collection on. And the conversation starts like this. We can get Democrats and Republicans in the same room. We can go ahead and start talking politics right away. And it's automatically going to lead to nothing that's of any value to anybody. But how the conversation works real well is when you sit down and you say, well, we have differences, but let's talk about puppies. Because everybody loves puppies, right? Warm, cuddly, on your lap. Once you start there, then it moves to the next level. Let's talk about something that becomes a little bit more difficult, but we've at least found a common ground of appreciation. Mm-hmm. And then that's how those conversations start. So it's no longer, as Jeff said, you're old and you're not of any value and you're young and you don't know anything. It's more of, what do you know? What do I know? How does that what we know kind of coincide? How did we learn it? Because I'm sure that the education process was very similar. We find common ground and then we work up from there. And it's interesting because we do inside of the MindSuite GPS, we are able to actually measure those things such as empathy because we have what's called a gap index. The gap index is on one side is how important is this to people? And then on the other side is how well are we implementing it? And in between there, you're going to find out this is really important, but we're not implementing it, or it's not important and we're implementing too much of it. And what's interesting is because you're implementing too much of it, a lot of companies say, well, let's just take that away then. That's of no value. Little do you know, you may be implementing too much, but you haven't assigned value to what you're doing. It may be very valuable. You just haven't put any kind of value to it. So you don't stop. You look at how do we assess this? And that's one of those conversation points. And that creates really neat talking points and really dynamic conversations inside of a business.
I'm curious with this tool, is it done individually like a Myers-Briggs or those sorts of things where I find out where my gaps are, or I'm participating in this and then we really look at as an entity as a whole? Is it both? Is it one or the other?
So how the GPS works as an entirety for the business. And inside the GPS, we can break down data points such as age, education level. So it does all those things. On top of that, we can utilize other tools inside of the GPS. Right. So we've used such things as Bassiter as one of our partners. Mm-hmm. So we can go in and do Bassiter assessments per individual. Then we can do a team Bassiter assessment. So now you take the GPS findings to start the conversation with the type of personalities in the organization, along with the generational side. And now you can actually start to say, okay, we have a lot of drivers here, but we don't have a lot of implementers. But our conversation is we need to start really working on initiatives in the organization. How do we start trying to find a way to manage team dynamics to drive that? And you'll see different generations have different type of individual assessments based on how they were brought up and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Most of the time when I hear about these assessments, they are around developing the employees individually and how we can talk to each other. I think this is the first time that I've had a conversation where you look at this character development as an organization as a whole, and then also get to pick the tools that you want to use for the individuals and the teams.
The biggest issue is when you're looking at the individual solely, but you're not looking at the business from a leadership and a character standpoint. You're not looking at the business. It's like rearranging the decks on the Titanic. You're rearranging the chairs on the decks on the Titanic. You can rearrange the chairs as many times as you want.
It's still the Titanic.
You're still on the Titanic. Mm-hmm. And the Titanic is big and slow and cumbersome, and it's not going to turn. Our goal is to get your teams together, sit down with them, figure out the dynamics with data. See, here's the thing. The data is something that you cannot dispute, because even though you may be a leader and you may say, well, that's not how it is, this is what your actual teams are really thinking, and perception is reality in business when it comes to teams and leadership. So if they really feel that they're undervalued, you as a leader can say, oh, they're not undervalued, all you want. But the reality is they are.
Right.
And so we take the Titanic, and we're trying to break it down and make all the individual teams speedboats. So now they're effective on their own, but we can all head in the same direction. And that's what the GPS does. It gives us possibilities to go after. And what's great is we don't just look at where there's issues with the business, because here's how a lot of the consultants work in today's day and age. And it's been like this since the 70s, actually. I think I have a problem in my business. I'm going to bring in someone that knows the book, Who Moved My Cheese? I'm going to have all my employees do a book report, and we're going to have a day of learning, right?
Offsite day of learning.
And you don't do that when you're going to get a major surgery. If all of something hurts, you go to your primary care physician, you say, man, my knee really hurts. And then he says, you know what, I'm going to send you to an orthopedic specialist. They send you there. Orthopedic specialist says, we need to get you an x-ray or an MRI. You go in and get an x-ray or an MRI. And then all of a sudden it becomes, this is what we need to do. This is our plan of attack. But businesses don't do that. They see a need, they try to fill it immediately. With the GPS, the goal is to walk through and be every step of that treatment process for your business. Mm-hmm. And then the deployment is based on best practices for what you need to do on our findings. And that's kind of how it works. But on that, we don't want to just talk about all the negative things that are happening, because that actually destroys morale inside of a business. What we like to do is start with what we can celebrate as wins together. So besides the commonality conversation of we both like puppies or we all like puppies, now it's what have we done really well that we can celebrate. Mm-hmm. So we're working on commonality with celebration, and then we're starting to work into, okay, we were so good over here with this particular project. Why didn't this project quite work out? What can we learn from this one and deploy it into that one? And it's really interesting how that works out.
Yeah. And the exciting part for leadership is taking that tool and then coming, you know, where we come alongside and help the leader then to implement a new plan, a new strategy. And hey, this is how you connect with your employees on a very practical level. And here's an example. We may have a value. The leadership says we have an open door policy value. We really want to be innovative. We invite new ideas. Okay, let's test that out. Young millennial comes up with a brand new idea that's out of the box. Hey, boss, I've got this idea for this. Yeah, we just don't do it that way. Okay, your open door policy, your innovative thing, it just doesn't work.
You just
shut it down right there. So in a lot of times, we as leaders, we don't even think about it, because the older you get in leadership, well, I've already done that. I've tried that. I don't need to go down that road because I know it doesn't work. So I'm not going to let, you know, my young employees spend all that time, you know, so I'm going to shut it down and say, no, it's not going to work. But what it does is it actually is demotivating it takes away the innovative approach and all those things. So coming alongside a leader and saying, hey, let's change our verbiage here. I know you know this doesn't work. And that millennial is going to find out it's not going to work either. However, what if things have changed? And millennials will say this all the time. The, you know, good leader, millennial leader will say, well, I know it hasn't worked in the past, but we're not living in the past. We have a new situation. Our company is in a different position. Our technology is in a different position. The world is different. So older leaders need to keep that in mind. So that's what we do by coming in with these tools and saying, this is what you value. This is what the team says you really are living. There's this gap. How do, and it's not just let's start a conversation, but now let's implement a new plan. And that's the exciting part, because now we start to see real change happening, and you get employees that get really excited about their work now.
And it's interesting, because about 98% of the companies that we've consulted with, the number one, what we call expectation gap index, the one we have a number of them. We have about 13 different indexes we can study, everything from resilience to innovation. The one that always rises to the top is strategy. And strategy has a number of points inside of it. It's a big part of strategy is the communication of strategy. And typically what we find is strategy is not managed by the employees doing the work or by the teams doing the work. Strategy is dictated by leadership. So typically what we find is there's a huge disconnect in not only the leadership as a team. We find a lot of the leadership is disconnected. They don't even know it. Personally, they're disconnected from the mission of the organization. They probably don't ever talk about it. But when we do the expectation gap index review for strategy, we find out that there's disconnection there. Then their communication downstream, which makes the effectiveness of the business successful, we find that if you're in that 98% business that has strategy issues, you're not communicating it properly downstream. And when you don't communicate properly downstream, everything falls apart, because it's the old concept of I tell Jeff the secret, Jeff tells the next person the secret. By the time it gets to the 100th person, the secret's changed 50 times over.
Yep.
And that's exactly what happens in the communication with strategy. And that's why leadership alignment is so important. And that's why, especially if you have a leadership team that's mixed, you may have a millennial, you may have a baby boomer, you may have an Xer. They all operate differently. So the big thing is how do we all get on the same page, same sentence, same word, same letter?
Right. And that's where a lot of myth comes into play. Oh, boomers, they want something different. Gen Xers want something different. Millennials want something different. And actually, the latest research has asked that question, what is it that we all want? And everybody wants the same thing. From boomer on down to Gen Zers, we all want purposeful work. We want work with meaning, with purpose. How we go about that is different. But when we focus on the differences of, you know, this is what I don't like about you, and this is what I, you know, whatever it might be. If we stop there and start focusing on the things that we do have in common, understand what drives us, and this tool helps, but understanding what drives each other, knowing that we have that thing in common, we want purposeful work. How do we get there?
And don't we also want to be validated in what
Absolutely.
We're doing?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
That's not, I think, unique to any generation, right? I think each of us want to know and be reaffirmed that we make a difference.
Right. Great point. And so a baby boomer, in the world that they grew up in, they felt valued and validated by getting a raise, a promotion, something that secured their future security. That was what their world was about. They just came out of a war. Their parents just fought a war. So for them, security in the future was a big thing and a big driver. And so they felt valued that way. For a Gen Xer, it was independence. Mm-hmm. If you want to validate me, let me do my thing and don't micromanage me. Trust me. That's a big thing. So
I wanted to wear my flannel, Jeff, when I was listening to Soundgarden, you know.
So for millennials, they feel validated when they're being poured into and let, you know, hey, you're doing a good job. Not just, hey, you screwed up, do it again. No, I mean, who wants to hear it? I mean, it's good to know what you did incorrectly so you can fix it. But more importantly, with that generation, they want to know, am I doing it right? Mm-hmm. Am I doing it the way you want it done? Can I do it better? And so they need that validation. Now, Gen Z, the research is brand new on these guys because they're just coming out of college now. But the early studies are showing that they're a very independent, entrepreneurial-minded group. As a matter of fact, they see infinite possibilities, not because of technology is something that they can access. It's because they see it as something that is a part of them. It's a very different mindset.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because a little bit of what we're finding with the Gen Zs too is they're becoming a more frugal generation than the millennials. They've seen the millennials take the vacations. They've seen them walk out of college with massive amounts of student debt, with jobs not waiting for them. So when you look at the Gen Zers, their money dynamic is very different than that of the millennials. It almost harkens back to the generations such as the Greatest Generation, where they were very much, I have to find value in this before I'm going to buy it. And that's what's really important for businesses to understand. When you're marketing to folks like yes. the Gen Zers, if you don't bring a value, not only are they interested in knowing what the organization is doing from a culture standpoint, but if you don't bring that value and put it out there, the Gen Zers will not buy it. They will not buy a product. And it's not the feel-good thing that a lot of the millennials came up with. This is true value. I give you a dollar. Am I getting a dollar's worth of value out of it? Not am I getting a dollar's worth of feel-good out of it.
And are you caring for the earth when you're creating this product?
Correct.
Are you taking care of all of your stakeholders, the vendors, the employees, me mm-hmm. as a customer? They're looking at it through, to Jeff's point, this really wide lens yeah. because we've taught them how to do that they've taught themselves yeah. through technology. As you were speaking earlier, I was thinking about the website or whatever it's called, the glass door, mm-hmm. where, you know, yeah. employees can say, here's how I'm rating this company that I worked for. Either I'm still with them and here's what I love, you know, the pros and the cons. And as our listeners are obviously business owners and leaders for organizations and businesses large and small, I'd love to kind of round the conversation around what does this look like? One, we're talking about attracting and keeping great employees. Right. But we're also talking about how does my business look to the potential consumer, to the world at large, and even my competitors. We've got to get this character development and this cultural reality nailed, don't we?
So it's interesting because personal branding has been all the rage over the last 5 to 7 years. I started a business a little too early on. It was during the recession and it was geared towards employment branding. And that's really where businesses need to start taking their focus, because here's how it works. Most businesses, they go on a hiring spree, they put information out there, then they send people to the black hole of nothingness where their resumes go to die, right? And then they end up reposting the job. So I've interviewed 120 maybe millennials, maybe Gen Zers, who are looking for purpose and cause. And then all of a sudden, I send them in the black hole of nothingness. And then I repost the job, right? So no validation there, right? So what ends up happening then is these companies don't look at it that maybe the people I'm interviewing could possibly be my customers. And right. they drop the employment branding goal. The goal of employment branding is to go in and develop and show that true value, leadership, and culture out to the world so that the world can say, I would really want to work at a place like that. And instead of trying to bring in talent for talent's sake, it's looking at figuring out where do people really fit into our organization to move the organization forward. If I'm looking for a marketing manager, I'm just not going to look for a marketing manager to take a job and I'm going to have them do certain tasks. How do they fit into the overall organization?
You know, off the top of my head, and this is like seriously off the top of my head as you were talking, I was thinking, wouldn't it be interesting for an organization to have an approach of attracting potential employees and having them over for a virtual dinner? I mean, what happens when we bring a new friend over or a guest over to our house for a dinner? They're learning a little bit about our culture. I mean, I don't know if there's any way to translate that into an organization on a larger scale for employees, but that was just off the top of my head.
It's interesting. I just read an article that there are companies going out there and they're doing recruiting events where they're taking these folks to go play laser tag and things like that.
My daughter is moving to Brooklyn in the summer to work for Red Bull. She just graduated from ASU and she was a promoter for Red Bull while she was here locally. And they've done just that. So they flew, you know, they went through the application process. This is when they selected, kind of narrowed it down to their last 18 kiddos. And they flew them out for 3 days, and part of it was a dinner out. And they were told ahead of time, look, this isn't just about how you show up and have a conversation with people, but it's what you order and what you choose to drink and how many conversations you're going to have. They had to do a 15 minute presentation, a case study that they got 2 days in advance, full with the slides and everything. So what is your stage presence? How can you communicate what you're, you know, and how well do you understand what we're looking at? They didn't do laser tag, but they did the escape room. And
oh, I love those.
Just all those different experiences, right? So this is a company that's really investing in their employees well before they're saying yes.
I would love to know this though, Karen.
Yeah.
When you talk to your daughter after she goes through this experience, how much did she understand that the position that she's actually applying for, what is its role and how does it play into the larger mission, value, and drive of what Red Bull is versus it being, yeah, we're doing this. We're looking for this type of person to do these six things, mm-hmm. and we're going to go have you do all this. Does she know where, when she is hired on, what her value is inside the business?
She was very good about learning that through the experience. She was blessed to have two interview experiences with them similar. The first time she didn't get the job. The second time she got the job. And they were very good about writing up, like, here is our interview process. It's a 3-day process. And that's what they were asking for. We want to see who you are coming into this organization. And with this particular job that you may have the benefit of filling for us, who are you in that role and how do you see that it matches back up to all of our overall company goals and needs?
The core competencies.
It really did. And the first time around, I'm not quite sure that she understood that that's what she had to project back.
But see, that's where I think that's where I'm seeing the disconnect. Mm-hmm. It's not the potential employee's responsibility to dig into that. The company needs to put that front facing so that the employee themselves can say, this is for me or this is not for me before they even apply.
And it's very clear.
And it's very clear because mm-hmm. that's what happens is we've all done it. Let's just talk about it. I mean, when I was in college, I worked at a place and I thought it was one thing. You get in the job and you're like, wait a second. Mm-hmm. This is
That never happens.
Yeah. And that's, it's almost like the company puts on a chameleon complex. They want to look one way until you get in. And then when you get in, all of a sudden, you're like, wow.
That's dating.
It's education. Right, my first career was as an educator in Kyrene School District. And having graduated from NAU, and like, all excited to go out and teach the world. I'm going to, help these kids fill their minds. And then
told you about AZ merit tests.
Thank God this was in the early 90s and it was something else then.
Yeah.
But the reality was what I had spent 4 years studying did not transfer over.
Exactly.
And I had to figure it out.
And it's funny you mentioned that because I went to NAU. My first year, I was in the education department at NAU because I wanted to be that Mr. Howland's Opus type teacher, right? I wanted to go in and really affect kids in that kind of fashion of like character values. Then I realized it's not happening in our school system. And then I had to switch my direction because I couldn't live with myself going in and being like, I've got to be the teacher that comes in, pushes papers to kids to get them so that the school gets a better rate. I just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's an interesting when the disconnect happens.
Jeff, we talked about you being on Rhino Nation a couple weeks ago and you and I spoke about it in one of our other shows, Best of Health Radio. We have another show called Culture Crush RX, and that whole show is dedicated to the conversation we're having. Cultures, businesses here in Arizona that we can really crush on their culture because who they say they are is legitimately who they are,
yeah.
rather than who they say they are. And then you either get hired on or you become a client or a customer of theirs and you quickly find out, oh, wow, this is not who they say, mm-hmm. what they say is happening. Mm-hmm. So it's great that you guys are committed to helping organizations get really not only clear about who they are, close those gaps with tools and measures that effectively drive that. Because we know we've got the one, you can't argue with sales and your numbers financially. You can't argue with structure and systems. The human aspect, the humanities piece, how great is it that you guys have got a tool and a way to measure that?
Well, yeah. And sorry, where it starts to fall apart, I think, all falls back on leadership. John Maxwell talks about this all the time. He says, look, everything rises and falls on leadership. And it's true. These companies, and I will say this in a general statement because obviously there's exceptions, but you don't start building an organization and you start with a vision and a purpose and then You know, you decide, I'm just going to blow that off. No, that's what you're going after. But over time, as the organization grows and we have to get more processes in place and systems and all these different things build up, sometimes we lose sight of our vision and it becomes, well, you know, hey, we're going to become best in class. Okay. What does that mean? You know, or our clients, our customers come first. That's a great value statement on that you've painted on the wall. What does it mean practically right now when you're telling your sales force, hey, your numbers are down. You've got to push this. You've got to get more sales. Well, that's not really, I mean, that's a motivator. That's a driver, but that's not necessarily our clients come first. I mean, I was part of an organization that said our clients come first. We don't push a product that they don't need. And yet once I got into it, it's like, oh, hey, wait a minute. Why am I pushing this product? The client doesn't need it because we make the most money on it. But you said on your value statement right there on the wall, I'm reading it. No, that's, you need to do it this way. It didn't last very long for me. But we lose sight of the vision and we lose sight because we want to be more effective or more efficient, or we get pressure because the economy is turning down and we've got to increase our revenues. We've got to drop expenses. So then it becomes about cutting expenses. Imagine every single day, what's your vision and purpose for the company? Is to cut expenses, make us more money. That's my job. How exciting is that? We mentioned that before earlier. However, imagine, and because nobody signs up for that, you know, very few people, you know, hey, I'll sign on for that. But if you said to your employees, if you said to your people, hey, this is our vision. We are making a product that's going to revolutionize somebody's home, make their family stronger, give them more time together so they can relate together. Not so they can watch TV or they could do, no, they could relate more effectively together. Parents can parent better. Their sons and daughters can be more friendlier in the neighborhood. They're pouring into people. Our neighborhoods are getting better. And our product is a huge part of helping our clients better their lives. How many want to sign up for that? A whole lot of people will. Why? Because it's a compelling vision. And as leaders, we need to continually pour into our teams this compelling vision of why we're doing what we're doing. That becomes attractive to everybody. And it gives us energy. And then we're able to have these conversations of, this is what our value statement says. This, you know what? We're not living it. How do we get there? How do we get back to that vision? How do we reinfuse this back into our teams and our people? Because in the end, at the end of the day, we are leading people. We're not leading machines. We are leading people. We've been entrusted as leaders with a great responsibility of having our teams around us. And what are we doing to pour into them to make their lives better? Because honestly, I don't care if we're making more and more money, because the money's going to end and burn. Look at any civilization. Where's their money? It's gone. It's transformed into something else. People last. People continue. Right? So what are we doing to pour into people? This isn't some fluffy thing. It's not soft skills. These are essential skills. And millennials in particular are looking for this into the future. The research is showing that they are looking for leaders 10 years into the road, 5 years down the road. The CEOs of the future need to be people who know how to inspire, who know how to pour into and build their teams. I'm getting really excited here. This is my passion.
Jeff Orr for 2020.
That's right.
You got my vote.
Right.
But that's what we do as leaders, as we have been entrusted with some lives. What are we going to do with that? And it goes beyond the numbers. It goes way beyond the numbers.
And it is interesting, though, Karen, that you brought up sales, because at the end of the day, nothing happens in a business without a sale. Right. There is no business, right? And when you look at leadership and culture and character, and you look at developing that all the way through the organization, sales increase. Because at the end of the day, the customer and the consumer wants to buy from an organization that they themselves have an affinity with, that they want to believe in. They want to be part of that story. Because here's the thing. Most of the customers don't have that in their own lives. So they're actually looking for it externally. And a lot of times, if a company can fill the void of that, and I'm not saying fill it in a false sense, but if they truly have that, you end up attracting more customers, because you're not only giving them a product or a service, you're filling something else emotionally that they need.
I get this vision, this kind of marketing 101, you know, when you're studying marketing and we're looking at the old TV commercials, right? Yeah. With the, I don't know, whatever product. It could be anything from Coca-Cola to, you know, some sort of hygiene product. that's what, right? We learned back then that if we can appeal to someone's emotion,
correct,
we can sell them a product. So that's one thing. But now we're talking about people have gotten savvier and they're now understanding, like, listen, I really want to know that this Coca-Cola or whatever, yeah, you know, that this product is or this experience is truly going to help me get to that, to that feeling.
I hate to say it, the marketing BS meter goes off with people when they see that it is a falsity,
yep,
that they think, oh, they're just trying to play up to me, right? But when you actually can see through things like Glassdoor or from, I hate to say, online reviews, because a lot of those can be skewed too, but where you really can see what an organization is doing in a transparent fashion, and I'm talking a truly transparent, right, fashion, now you start to see customers will be like, I want to be part of that.
And here's what I think, and Jeff, you can probably help me understand this better, but I'm, even the way that I've been looking at working with organizations and companies, even starting with Business Radio X as an example, when I came on board 2 years ago and bought my own studio, I not only looked to see who is this Business Radio X thing, then I went to LinkedIn and looked to see who is the leadership. Yeah. I'm willing to bet, and I've never thought of this before, that's what our potential employees are doing, aren't they? They're like, okay, I want to work for XYZ company, and it might be just here in Arizona, might be international. Let me go to LinkedIn. Let me look to see who's at the top. Let me look to see what people are saying about them and these other Glassdoor and these other things. But we have such a lens, whether to your point, Ryan, whether it's true or not, you know, because people can put whatever they want out there, we can get a kind of feel from a lot of different areas of research within just a couple minutes who these companies really are.
That's right. And our technology has really amplified that quite a bit. So it's easier to access those things. When I was growing up, as I was starting to enter the workforce in just, you know, like late 80s into the early 90s, as far as, you know, after college, you wanted to work in an industry. You went to the library, you looked up the reference section on, you know, the industry code, and massive volumes, and you were researching and looking at this company and all, you know. And so you would do that. It took a lot of time and effort if you wanted to go that far. And, you know, the beauty about today's technology is the entire world's library is sitting in our phone. And the access to it. So we have quicker access. Unfortunately, we have tainted access because a lot of that information can be tainted. I'm laughing mentally because you guys are talking about Glassdoor, and I'm the cynical side of my Gen X personality is like, yeah, these are a bunch of, you know, people that are
disgruntled
or whatever.
But there's also value on that to understand,
yes,
to see your shortcomings as a business,
right,
leader.
And so you take that with a grain of salt. You look for, what are the five stars? What are the one stars? And look at all those different things, get a bigger picture. And that's the beauty about the technology is that we have greater access. So millennials are accessing that very quickly, and they're kind of surmising, all right, is this something that I want to be a part of? And they are looking at the feel, the vibe.
Yes. And I think they have, sorry.
Go ahead.
I think they have their bullshit meter up, as you pointed out earlier. And I think they just have this way of feeling into whether this is truth or not. I, as you were sharing, I'm likening it to even just my experience when I'm looking to stay at a hotel. I've never done Airbnb, but I know people do the same thing. I'm going to go and I'm going to look online to see what the reviews are. And there's going to be some that are, you know, you can tell like, wow, this person really has, you know, clearly they're not going to ever leave a good review, to the folks who are out there, you know, saying everything that they can about it from a place of, you know, facts.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these generations coming up who are now leadership, you told me something in the green room, Jeff, that I was blown away. Speak to who are our bulk of leaders. It's our Gen X, aren't they?
Yeah, Gen X. This was a research study from April of 2018. Gen Xers are holding about 51% of the leadership positions globally. Because a lot of the baby boomers are beginning to transition out. They're retiring. And we actually have a leadership gap because not enough millennials are stepping up to the leadership plate for a number of reasons. Some don't feel that they are quite ready. Others are looking at failed leadership and saying, well, I don't want to be like that. But we've got a leadership gap. Gen X leaders are starting to assert their authority a little bit more. Problem with our generation is we got impatient because there were so many baby boomers. At the time, they were the largest group. And they held all these leadership positions, and now they're sticking around. They're not retiring as quickly, so they're sticking around, and we're tired of waiting. So we'll end up leaving companies and doing our own thing. The millennial group is going to be the largest group as baby boomers are going out, 75 million of them in the workforce. So they are in need and desiring of real connection and leadership development. And as this generation, Gen X, in these positions, we need to step up to the plate, pour into this group, because Gen Z is right on the doorstep. And who's going to be leading them? Millennials. So our millennial leaders need our guidance. We need them to help us learn some things about life, whatever it might be, because they have a different perspective than we do. But they are in need of some leadership skill development, and they ask for it. This is, you know, nothing new there. So they can lead the next generation, which is right on their doorstep.
So prime example of bringing culture to the forefront, both for future employees and for customers. When was the last time you saw a company talk about a failure, how they learn from it, and how it benefits all the stakeholders in their organization?
Well, I'm very lucky because it happens every day in here.
Yeah, well, you're working in a phenomenal location here at Mach 6 because of just what it represents. But look around outside of Mach 6. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to find businesses that will say, we had a failure, but here's how we learned from it. Here's what it did for our employee base. Here's what it did for leadership. Here's what it did to improve our product for the consumer, our service for the consumer. Failure is baked into our culture. It's starting to turn around, but it's baked into the business culture. You don't talk about failure. Mm-hmm. And part of culture is, and especially the millennials and the Zers, they want to see that transparency. They want to see that it's not all a bed of roses that you're laying in. And companies are starting to come around, but it's taking a long time.
Here's why they're turning around. It's because Gen Xers are starting to get into those C-suites.
Yeah.
Because boomers, okay, the way they were raised is you did not talk about failure. And it wasn't because it was arrogance. It was because in that culture, in the time that they were raised, if you admitted failure or weakness and you were transparent as a leader, then you lost credibility with your followers. They would not follow you. That was their mindset.
You weren't Gen even Xers, doing it at home either, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, exactly.
And Gen Xers rebelled against that. And we said, no, we want to be more transparent. Yes. So that's why you're starting to see it, because we're starting to rise into those top leadership positions. We are more willing to embrace the failures and what are we learning. And I agree. I think more companies need to say that. It'll be interesting to see if culture will accept that, because one of the disappointments I've seen over the last probably 10, 15 years is that a lot of the markets seem to be driven by perception and not reality. So if you get a company that says, yeah, we failed here. Oh, their stock just dropped 25% for no particular reason at all, other than they said, we failed. Oh, and this is what we learned. Oh, it doesn't matter. I'm getting out of it.
Boy, the timing of that story is important too,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
But I agree. I think more companies need to say, this is where we failed. This is what we're learning, and this is how we're projecting into the future what we're going to grow
in. And it's interesting because companies don't even talk about the learning process anymore. You're not finding a lot of organizations that are educating the customer, the consumer, on how they're getting from A to Z. You know, you get the company that just shut down that was doing the blood test, Theranos, and you look at that. No one knew what was going on there, right? Like none of you. I mean, the investors didn't know, the consumers didn't know, the doctors didn't know. It was magic, exactly. And then look what happens. Everyone's like dumbfounded that, oh my gosh, we got taken. Well, if you kind of look around, you can kind of see the signs, you know. And I think that's where certain businesses that happen like that are going to start making the ability to be transparent a little bit more prevalent. Because I think people do want to know what's really going on here. Mm-hmm.
So
I know. I'm looking at Jeff like, hey, Jeff, this is your show. No, just kidding.
It gets back down to the leadership issue.
It does. Well, in that particular example, right, it was completely, she was dishonest. Yep. She got, started off, from what I read, you know, with really wonderful intentions. And then it just got ahead of her.
Yeah.
And then it went down the.
Here's an interesting thing, though. Yes, that fell apart. But what about the 15-year-old who came up with a test for cancer and it cost like pennies? Little entrepreneur guy, Gen Zer. Maybe, and I have no idea what his inspiration was. It's very possible that in the news, hey, Theranos, well, gosh, if she could do it, maybe Maybe it doesn't really cost that much. Maybe I could figure out a way to do this. And he did. And so it opened up the possibilities for something more. So even something that was wrong and unethical and it just didn't work did inspire somebody to think differently in a different perspective. And that's what I love about this new generation coming up is they see the endless possibilities.
Yeah, you had said that
which
earlier. Absolutely.
Inspires me.
Yep.
It really does because it energizes me and reminds me that, you know, I used to think that way too. I used to, before I got jaded,
age will do that to you, Jeff.
Yes, it does. But
if
it doesn't
allow
have
it.
To.
Yeah, exactly.
We allow it.
If we allow it. And in fact, as you were sharing, I'm thinking of many of the boomers that have come through the studio and shared their success stories. And many of them are willing to say, here's where we failed and here's how we fixed it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I've also heard these folks who are nearing retirement age, one, they are staying on longer, but they're also saying, I poured into my business, whether I was an employee, an executive leader, or I owned the business, I poured into it throughout my, you know, late 20s, 30s, and 40s, only to get to this side of, you know, late 50s and 60s, realizing that I forgot about life,
mm-hmm.
and it was all around the numbers all the time. And they're beginning to say for themselves and their own preservation, their own legacy, I need to shift.
Yes. And that's one of the things that I coach my leaders on all the time is don't forget to live life while you're building the life. Because the stuff that is really important, you need to pour into that just as intentionally as you're pouring into your business. Because the reality is 5 minutes after you die, all that hard work is going to go off to somebody else. All your clients, they'll get taken by somebody else. Your business is going to go to somebody else. So make sure that you're pouring intentionally into the things that really do matter because that pile of cash isn't going to make you feel better when you're sick.
And our kids are watching us, right? If we look at it from a family perspective or even organizational perspective, as these kids are graduating from universities and or just going right into the workforce, mm-hmm. they're looking to see who are these leaders in these companies? Do they have a life outside of that role? And if not, that may not be the best fit for me because I don't want to be that.
So I have an interesting story. So Wayne, the gentleman that we work with that developed the MindSuite GPS, he went and met with one of the humanities departments down at ASU. Guess where it was? In the basement.
Oh.
So he went down and he met with one of the professors and they were talking and they did a study that colleges are bringing in good kids. By the time they leave, they don't have the empathy. They've basically had all of the things that kept them youthful, vibrant, energetic, taken out of them. Because the business culture is looking for a result out of those students that now are becoming employees. So we're taking good kids, siphoning them through college to turn them into something that has no empathy that drives a business goal. And when you see that and you really think through that, I mean, you really think through that, it's almost sad.
Mm-hmm.
But it is what our business culture has developed is we have to get that financial result. Instead of looking at it as if we pour into the humanities of our company, we're going to get the financial result times put a number after that because the more you grow into it, the more money you're going to make anyway. Why not actually take a look at that as part of your business?
Yeah, in 15 seconds or less, this is how it plays out. You pour into your people, they're not going to leave. If they don't leave, you don't have to spend money replacing them. How much money are you saving?
Right.
A ton of money because it costs so much more to replace somebody, to go on that search, to find them, see if they're the right fit, than it is to just get the right person to begin with and develop and live life and walk with them through life and engage them by challenging them, letting them grow, giving them opportunity to fail and learn from it.
And another whole segment, because this one's about what to wind down, but another whole segment is that executive leader or those executive leaders have got to do their own work too.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Starts with leadership.
It starts with leadership. So it's one thing to understand the tool that you're sharing with them and to be able to read it and walk alongside you so that you can help them, you know, create this amazing culture that people want to stay and interact and they're not building walls. How much of this is the leader themselves taking personal responsibility to up level how they're doing life and how they're doing business? It's got to be huge.
Yeah. That's the number one priority right there is if you are not growing as a leader, you can't expect your team to grow. Mm-hmm. If you are not staying humble and teachable, you can't expect your team to do the same.
Right.
So it's there's an old phrase, the speed of the leader, the speed of the team. And mm-hmm. it's very true. So as leaders, we need to stay out front, stay teachable, be learning, be growing, admit failures, but how are we going to fix it? How are we pouring into our people? All those different things. Our next generation of leaders are going to see that. They're going to see it modeled. And then they are also going to be growing in their leadership because we're challenging them to do the same.
They're going to thrive on it.
Yes, absolutely.
And I mentioned this a couple of times. What I love so much about the work that you two are doing together is just that. Way to summarize, Jeff. And it's not just branding and character development for the sake of what do we look like, or who do we look like out there online or on our brick and mortar. But it's the thread that runs all the way through. And you're helping organizations do that because you have an understanding of human development. You have an understanding of generational stereotypes and really how we function inside those and how do we come across the aisle. But we also have your experience, Ryan, with marketing and understanding how we portray who we are out to the world. What a great blend of the two of you as you begin to work more closely together.
Yeah. It's awesome. It's the Jeff and Ryan show, or the Ryan and Jeff show. I'm not sure how we're going to market that, but you know.
You could take title slot.
Hey, whatever.
Whatever rings really well. So
I would love, as we finish this conversation, any lasting thoughts around our conversation today? Anything that we hadn't thought to share that you want to kind of go out with? And then also, how do people get a hold of you to begin to find out more about the work that you're doing together and get you in as a speaker or speakers and learn from you guys?
Absolutely. The last thing I would say is, as a leader, don't underestimate the power that you have of influence, the influence that you have on others. And it's not just at work, it's at home. It's in your neighborhood, it's with your neighbors, it's everywhere that we go. We have the opportunity to inspire the best out of people. And instead of looking and listening to the media that is constantly negative and telling us otherwise, see the good in things that are going on, focus on the good, focus on the truth, live it out. You can reach me at indemandleadership.com. You could send me an email. I do speaking engagements, I do workshops, I do keynotes, and you can find all that information on my website or at depth.rocks. I'm also there, and they're handling a lot of that stuff. And Ryan and I are very open to taking on a couple new clients, at least this year, right?
Yes.
It's just very exciting things that we can help organizations really turn around. And it's not a quick fix. This is a longer-term approach.
I would say, from a leadership perspective, don't try to leave a legacy. Focus on now and be a humble servant to the people around you. Hmm. That will drive more opportunity for you and for the folks around you than trying to focus on leaving the legacy that you're trying to build for only yourself. I can be reached at Xpleo Media. That's the letter X, P as in Paul, L-E-O, media.com. If anyone's interested in marketing or talking about how they communicate, whether it be online, offline, building their character, building their leadership inside the organization, that's what Jeff and I do, and we specialize in, and we'd love to talk to folks about how we can help them.
Your website, by the way, it's just so fun to sit and stare and watch the little video that that takes place, because it speaks volumes about the kinds of companies and organizations you work with and how you help them tell their story. And at least I didn't have any volume on. Is there volume on it?
No, I have sound? Inside my projects, I have volume on the videos and things of that.
Yeah, but
nature,
even just that, what do you call it? The header?
Yeah.
I watched it, I think, at least four times, just like, wow. Feeling into these companies, and I only saw a couple of the names represented, but great job.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you, Karen.
Yeah, and we can find you on LinkedIn as well?
Yes, you can find me at LinkedIn at linkedin.com. I think it's /in/ Ryan Xpleo.
Mm-hmm. And Jeff, I know you're there too.
Yes, I am. I believe it's Jeff Orr 2. Pretty sure. I just copy and paste and throw it on
me
to people.
Me too.
So.
Is Jeff Orr, is that name common? Orr, O-R-R?
It didn't used to be, but apparently it is.
Yeah.
There's a country singer, because I'm on iTunes as well, and he took my spot, but I'm still on there.
Because you're a musician as well.
Yes, 3 CDs.
Yeah. I've
performed all over the country.
Yeah.
Big stages, small and all. There's a Air Force pilot that's Jeff Orr, all kinds of stuff. So yeah. Just look for me on LinkedIn and find the one that says In Demand Leadership and you'll
Perfect.
Be fine. Or TEDx speaker or whatever.
Yeah, and go listen to that TEDx talk. It really, really is fantastic.
It was fun. I loved that. That was awesome.
And it's a necessary conversation to like the one we had today. So again, you guys, thanks for being here. It was a lot of fun to connect
Thank you,
with
Karen.
You.
Thanks,
you bet.
Karen.
You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X, broadcasting live from within Max 6 and Conscious Capitalism Arizona Studio. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Karen Nowicki. Thanks for listening.